Thank you for touring the inside of the Backus Page House Museum. Your admission assists with general operating costs and special events and projects throughout the year. Before going inside, let's talk about the outside of this beautiful brick home. Speaking of bricks, how many bricks do you think it took to build this house? Go on, give it a guess. The Backus Page House contains an estimated 72,000 bricks, and due to the variations in color, it is very likely they were made right here on the farm. Was your guess close? John E. Pierce, who donated part of the land for John E. Pierce Provincial Park, stated that the bricks were made out of clay obtained from the ravine at the rear of the house. The clay was trampled by oxen in order to make it malleable, and then the bricks were shaped with a wooden mold. They were left out in the sun to dry. These are called adobe bricks. The outer walls of the house are 3 and 4 bricks thick. Many of the inside walls are 2 to 4 bricks thick. The Backus Page House was one of the first brick buildings constructed in Dunwich Township in 1850. The Backus Page House is of Georgian design in what is termed Federal Empire style, and reflects the American origins of the Backus family and of the training of the builder Robert Morris. Morris immigrated from Wales to the United States and completed his apprenticeship in Philadelphia. He moved to the Talbot settlement because he found out that there was work available here. Morris constructed many other homes in the area, including the Beaubier home, now called Victoria Manor in Dutton, and the addition to the Stephen Backus house, currently owned by the Littlejohns. He also built the steeple tower at St. Peter's Anglican Church. Morris completed all the work on the house, such as the woodworking, brickmaking, lath, and plastering. This 2,800 square foot home was built using virgin oak and black ash beams and joists. The 3 original fireplaces were hand-worked with paneling and mantles of black walnut. The floors in the home were tongue and grooved by hand. According to a visitor, the style of trim is the same as 1840s New York brownstones. Many houses of this time period had a summer kitchen off the back of the house to keep the heat of cooking out of the main part. There is a roofline visible on the back of the house and a white outline. We believe this was a summer kitchen and later a woodshed. You've heard a lot of settler names so far, and you might be wondering, just how did Backus Page House Museum get its name? We're named after the first and the last residents of the house. The first residents were Andrew and Mary Jane Backus, and the last residents were Morley and Grace Page. Therefore, Backus Page. Before entering the museum, please leave any pets, food, or beverages outside. You are welcome to take pictures. Just be sure to tag us on all social media at Backus Page House for Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, Facebook, and more. Let's go inside the back door and see how Andrew, Mary Jane, and the Backus children lived during the 1850s. They did have 12 children, but only 6 lived to adulthood. You have now entered the kitchen, where the floor in here and the entranceway are made of black ash. Mary Jane Backus spent hours in this room cooking on a wood stove, preparing meals for her family. What's one thing you notice is missing from this kitchen that you have in your modern kitchen? How about running water? Mary Jane and her daughters would have had to travel back and forth to the well for any water they needed, not just in the kitchen, but for bathing, laundry, and house cleaning. That's why we've placed the buckets and shoulder yokes near the back door, since they would have been frequently used during the day. Behind the stove is a bathtub where the family would bathe oldest to youngest. If you've ever heard of the term, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater, this is what it refers to. In front of the window is a daybed. A daybed could have been used as a bed for sleeping or for sitting and lounging. We have placed the bed here in the kitchen for the purpose of showing where a farmhand would have slept. Instead of sleeping upstairs with the rest of the family, farmhands would have slept on a separate level of the house or out in the barn. Note the stove in the far corner. It is a fully functional replica of a step stove, known as such because of the oven box being above the range, giving it the look of 2 stair steps. There are four burners plus two warming places on top of the oven. Mary Jane would have dried herbs, clothing, and kitchen linens on a drying rack above the stove, as well as using an outside clothesline. Water for laundry would have been heated up on the stove or in warmer weather, outside on a fire. The family would have eaten their meals here in the kitchen unless there was company to warrant using the dining room. A local diary states that the Backus family ate their first meal in the home during the summer of 1851. Walk through the door between the wood box and step stove into the pantry. This room would have stored all their foodstuffs and been the site of all the prep work and washing up for meals. In front of the window is the dry sink. Water would have been dumped into the large tub and used for washing dishes. The dirty water wouldn't have been wasted, though. The daughters, or Mary Jane herself, would have emptied the basin into the garden to water the plants. The blue cupboard in the corner is a pie safe, where all baked goods would have been stored to keep out insects and rodents. The flour bin in front of the window is to store flour, as bread was part of almost every meal. In the 1850s, we were starting to get into patent medicines being sold through advertisements in newspapers and magazines. You could order the medicines and they would arrive through the mail, or sometimes your local general store, which would have been in Tyrconnell, had these available to purchase. We have various sizes and colors of bottles on the upper shelf. Since there wasn't a doctor in the area at the time, Mary Jane would have used herbs from her garden and plants found in nature to make salves, tinctures, teas, and poultices for common ailments. She, too, would have used these types of bottles for storage. You can see one bottle on the shelf still with most of its label and contents claiming to be snake oil used as an antiseptic, which might reduce the possibility of infection. Walk through the door to the Backus' parlor. Children would rarely have been in the parlor. Parlors were the showroom of the house and were designed to show the outside world how prosperous a family was. They were filled with furniture and decorations that were not used every day by the family. Usually the rooms were dark and gloomy, as blinds were kept drawn, furniture covered, and doors shut. As well, for many families, it was expected that the parlor would be furnished once in a lifetime. The trim in this room is black walnut, and the floor is white pine. The piece of trim which serves as the baseboard was made out of a different wood and stained to match the rest of the trim. Beside the fireplace is a spittoon for men who chewed tobacco and needed a container to spit out excess tobacco juice. The long body clock to the left of the fireplace depicts a scene from the Napoleonic War. The clock, library chair, yellow upholstered occasional chairs, etagere, footstool, and small table with drawers predate the house. Please proceed into the front hall. Notice the clothes railings. This was typical in a farmhouse of this era. The front door is the original door from when the house was built. It is made of white pine, which weathers well. Even though the surrounding parts have been redone, the door itself has survived the years. This is the entrance that guests would have used, but there are stories of Andrew Backus coming in from the fields across the road and tramping his muddy boots through the front hall to the kitchen. The hall tree was a connection to the Black family, who were established in the Tyrconnell and Wallacetown area early in the life of the community. These are the original stairs, although simplistic in appearance, reflect the great skill of the carpenter. The spindles and banister are black walnut. There is faux painting on doors, trim, and woodwork, an excellent example of the skill of the painter. This type of art required years of training and application, and is no comparison to today's standards. It was recommended that faux painting be used where possible to replicate existing woodwork. Please continue up the stairs and remember to use the handrail. Let's begin with the bedroom to your immediate left at the front of the house. Notice the original door handles on the doors upstairs. Perhaps this room was the master bedroom because it is the only one with a lock on it, or perhaps many of the children slept in this room together. The mattresses on all the beds would have been held up by rope. Over time, the rope would loosen and have to be tightened, hence the term sleep tight. Underneath the large bed, you will notice a trundle, truckle, trumble, or hurley bed attached to casters. This is a great space-saving way to add more sleeping areas. This would have been a young child's bed, as it prevented them from falling out of a higher bed and kept them close in case they cried. Mattresses would be stuffed with straw, corn husks, or any suitable plant materials and require frequent changing. Since most people only had two outfits of clothing, one for work and one for church and special occasions, you didn't need much room to store clothing. You'll notice that none of the bedrooms in the house have closets. This room has a wardrobe that originated at the Pierce homestead down the road. We've set out a chamber pot, a bedpan, and a commode. Outside, we have a replica outhouse. Make sure to check it out before leaving. Chamber pots were used during the night, so no one had to find a light source and make the long trek outside to relieve themselves. In the morning, you would take your chamber pot with you to the outhouse to be emptied, and bring it back inside to be washed and put back under the bed. During the day, you would use the outhouse, or if out in the field or forest, you went where you could find a modest place. As for supplies, the luxury of toilet paper was unheard of. Folks would use leaves, fur, corn cobs, or pages from newspapers and magazines. Joseph C. Gaiety of New York was the producer of the first packaged toilet paper in 1857. It consisted of moistened flat sheets medicated with aloe named Gaiety's Medicated Paper, and Gaiety's name was printed on every sheet. Most residents in our area would not have purchased this medicated paper, but would continue to use the more economical leaves, rags, and newspapers. On the washstand beside the bed is a hair receiver. People would save their hair when they brushed or cut it to be woven or plaited and put into lockets, to be left visible through cut glass windows of a brooch, to be made into watch chains, bracelets, or jewelry, and to be placed inside a pincushion so that the oil from the hair coats sewing needles, making them easier to slip through material. In the window, there are slates for school and some toys. The little horse made of bone was found in a post hole on the Stephen Backus farm. We've placed two hooked rugs in this room that were made by many museum visitors over a 3-year period. One is a star pattern, and the other is a hit-and-miss pattern that uses cloth scraps, but it adds so much color and warmth to a room. Let's move to the next bedroom on your left. Both this and the previous bedroom floors are made of white pine. Notice the clothes railings that run along the walls where you could hang your clothing or night clothes. This was quite characteristic of an 1850s farmhouse. The log cabin quilt sitting on the bed is made out of old dress material and is at least 135 years old. If you need more time in any of the rooms to look at more artifacts, please just push pause and then push play again when you're ready to move on. Let's move to the next small bedroom on your left. This was probably used as the children's room. It would have got most of its heat from the kitchen below and the heat rising up through the stairwell. The floors in the rest of the upstairs rooms, including this one, are made of tulip tree. This room is now our Talbot room. All the furniture in this room has at one point belonged to Colonel Thomas Talbot. To the left is a beautiful bed used by Charles J. Stewart, the Anglican bishop of the Diocese of Quebec, from 1826 to 1837. Colonel Talbot had the dresser and the bed commissioned especially for the bishop's visit to the Talbot settlement. It is noted the bishop had visited the settlement previously in 1820 to 22 while he was a minister. This decoratively carved bed is supposedly made by a carpenter from the town of Fingal or Middlemarch. Just around the corner of the door sits the chest of drawers. This was used for the bishop's clothes and other belongings. Note the dresser has locks on all drawers. On the walls, there are some original land deeds dating to the early 1800s and signed by Colonel Thomas Talbot himself. The bed on the right is rather simple but sturdy, and this belonged to Thomas Talbot and was still used up until recently, being donated to the museum. In the windowsill, you'll notice a red brick. This may look like an ordinary, dirty old brick, but this artifact is rather unique. It was part of Malahide House, Colonel Talbot's home, which was sadly demolished in 1997. When the colonel landed in Port Talbot on the 21st of May, 1803, he and his hired help erected a log house on the hill facing the lake overlooking the valley of Talbot Creek to the northeast. The house had three rooms, a storeroom, sitting room, and kitchen. What the home lacked in beauty, the location it was in made up for it. As years went by, additions were built on, adding to its splendor. Feel free to pause the tour and read our Talbot panel. We ask that you do not enter the next room, as it is for staff only. The room is interesting because the walls have never been finished until staff and volunteers added a coat of paint in 2014. They have never been, previous to our restoration, painted or wallpapered, and the floors have never been finished. For both the Backuses, the Pages, and our museum, this is a storage room. Because the families didn't have a basement that was not damp, they used this room to store some extra belongings that were not used every day. When Morley Page lived on site, he stored his maple syrup buckets in this room, according to his daughter, Iris. Please take a moment to sign our guest book on the little table. If you leave us your email address, we will keep you up to date on museum events and news. This last room is our exhibit. The exhibit this year is called Out of the Storeroom. Take a look at our collection of unique items. They don't have a place in our regular themed displays, but are very one of a kind and seldom seen. You're welcome to pause the audio tour and browse the exhibit and hit play again when you come back out into the hallway. Notice the size of floorboards in the landing. They were cut out of tulip wood. It would be very difficult to find planks of this size today. The Backus family had a loom on this landing and spent many hours weaving here. The ample sunlight from the windows facilitated this type of work. The loom currently residing in its place near the window is actually a barn loom and a bit too large to have been the original. However, evidence, marks on the floor and walls, indicate that a loom would have stood here. Originally, when the Backuses lived in the home, the woods that you see across the road was clear cut to the lake to see ships coming in. That's how the house got its original name of Lakeview. It has only been since the Ministry of Natural Resources took over the land that the area has been replanted as a wooded area. Please continue back down the stairs using the handrail and to the right into the dining room. This room was the dining room because of the connecting door to the kitchen. The wood is white pine. The chimney that houses this fireplace is divided in two, and there is a fireplace in the room behind. The windows in the house are called 6/6 after the 12 window panes. If the carpet under the table is pulled back, the floor under the dining room table isn't finished. The Backuses would have always had a rug down, therefore, no need to finish that small patch of floor. We have evidence in the fireplace that it was once used to cook on before the arrival of a stove. In the fireplace is an eye for where a crane would have been to cook over. This would have been used before and likely after the wood stove was installed, even just to keep water boiling for humidity in the winter and, of course, warm drinks. The fireplaces are distinctive and reflect the Regency period in their design. They were constructed in a mortise and wooden peg old world craftsmanship manner. They reflect the skill and age of the craftsman, in this case, an older craftsman who was probably trained in Europe. Please move through the far left door and into the last room of the house. Women would have spent a large part of their day in the kitchen, so this room may have been a room for the children. A cradle near the fireplace would have kept a young child warm while their mother was working in another area of the house. The room was also used by Mary Jane when she was sewing or performing other everyday tasks that women in the 1850s needed to do. Rooms such as this one were also used by an elderly parent that could have moved in when they were no longer able to take care of themselves and go up and down the stairs. Please take some time to look through and purchase some souvenirs in the gift shop. All proceeds go to support the operations of the museum. Chicano Heritage Society is a volunteer organization that relies on donations, memberships, and volunteers. If you are able to assist either with a donation of your time or finances, please speak with our staff before you leave.